You're listening to the Crowdfunding Nerds Podcast, a podcast that will help you succeed before, during, and after your crowdfunding event. And now, here is your host, Andrew Lowen.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Crowdfunding Nerds. Andrew Lowen here with another awesome, amazing, fantastic episode of Crowdfunding Nerds. I am joined, as always, by my SEO marketing wizard, Rick, who is also known as the noob that just backs Kickstarters, and sexy Irish Sean. And then we're also joined by Mr. Gabe Barrett, handsome, the creator of the Board Game Design Lab and Barrett Publishing. Welcome.
Yeah, appreciate it. I too probably have a percentage of Irish for whatever that counts. So,
well, then you're part sexy.
No, there you go.
So Sean is sexy Irish Sean, even though he's only about 25% Irish. It's because of his accent. It's really the accent. It was voted the sexiest accent in the world, which is why Sean is sexy Irish Sean.
Gotcha. I don't think the accent of my people is going to be up there in the sexiest accents of the world. People, yeah, sorry.
Oh, well. The question I'd have is, who would vote for the Bama accent being the sexiest accent in the world, if you had to guess?
Probably people from Alabama. I would say we have a pretty good home field advantage there. Probably anyone who is a fan of college football. Honestly, that's kind of what we do. That is the factory that just doesn't seem to close down south. So.
That is awesome. All right, so let's move into the actual topic at hand, how to inject steroids into your marketing, according to Gabe Barrett. So let's start off with an introduction. Gabe, who are you? How'd you get into game design and all that good stuff?
Yeah, so my name's Gabe, as you said. I run the Board Game Design Lab, which started off as a podcast and turned into a pretty amazing community of board game designers online. And I've been board game designing, I don't know, I told somebody 10 years the other day, but I think now that I think more about it, it's like 12 or 13 years I've just been doing this. I started off just kind of dabbling and messing around with it. And, you know, as I would play new games, I would often think, oh, I wish I could design one of these. And I would just kind of tinker with things. But for a long time, it was just having fun. It had no seriousness at all. And I made a bunch of really just terrible games that I would actually, you know, design and prototype and play test, but it was nothing for real until about, oh, I don't know, 6 years ago, something like that, when I started doing it for real. And I thought, you know what? I wonder if I could design a game that would get published, almost like a personal challenge. And so I just kind of got a little deeper into designing games. And then that led me into creating the podcast where, you know, I wanted a show that interviewed designers and publishers and was very, very specific in the topics that it dove into. And I couldn't really find the podcast that I was looking for. So I thought, well, let me just create it. And so a little over 4 years ago, I did that. And it's just been a crazy journey ever since of now. Basically, this is my full-time job of working in the gaming industry, mainly through the podcast and the community, but also through publishing my own games and books and things like that.
And because I find it extremely interesting, and I think a lot of your fans from the Board Game Design Lab might actually cross over for this episode and just give it a listen. Who are you?
Yeah, for sure. So I live in Honduras with my wife, who is also my number one playtester. I think the stats are still pretty solid. She beats me about 94% of the time at my own games. And she has just an incredible knack for beating me at the games that I designed and should know how to play better than her, even on the first play. When she has never played it before, she has a tendency to beat me, so that's always fun. We have three children at the moment, with one on the way. She's pregnant right now, due in about 6 weeks. So,
about congratulations. To add,
yeah, I'm no Andrew Lowen. I don't have like 42 kids running around here, but other than that.
The corona boom.
I taught English for a while, and now I've kind of moved over, and I'm helping out with a lot of like professional development and recruiting and trying to bring more teachers here to the school. I live up in the mountains of Honduras. I live on campus here. It's just a great little community of other teachers, a lot of them from North America. It's a bilingual school, so we have, I don't know, maybe 25 or 30% of our teachers are English speakers and the others are Spanish speakers. So I get to, you know, have a very diverse group of people that I get to engage with on a daily basis, which is pretty cool.
Out of all the podcasts you've recorded, is there anyone that stands out to you, or which one would you say is your favorite?
That's a big question, man. That's a lot of different episodes to think through. I think I'm going to cop out a little bit and just say the first one. Jamie Stegmaier was the very first episode. He agreed to come on as an interview. He doesn't do this anymore. He doesn't agree to come on for people's like early episodes. Now you have to kind of have a track record and prove that you're, you know, going to do this and be there, be around for a while. But back in, you know, 4 years ago, he came on my show as the number one episode, and that episode has been downloaded tens of thousands of times, and it just had great content. And, you know, he was a phenomenal guest. He come back on the show, I think, three or four more times since then. But yeah, I guess episode one even though I was just getting started, and this is kind of way back when I was just figuring out how to interview people and things like that, I guess I would say that one's probably the favorite one.
And how did you score that? Did you have like a relationship with them beforehand, or was it just like, okay, I'll give this a try? Or...
No, I just sent him a message. I basically just kind of cold called him. When I first started the podcast, I sent messages to maybe 15 or 20 different designers and publishers and people in the industry that I looked up to or I thought were really interesting or you know, I thought they might make for good guests of the show. And out of that initial group, I think 11 or 12, something like that, said yes, which is very surprising. You know, I thought maybe I'll get one or two out of the 15 or 20, and I got 11 or 12 or something like that. And so it was just phenomenal to see how generous and giving the people in this industry are, even early on when I was first getting started.
You know, you brought up a really great topic that you had to actually send him an email. In essence, what you did was you pitched Jamie Stegmaier on in coming to your onto your show. And you did this, you said a dozen, you had another dozen people respond to your invite. And I have done a lot of email marketing or email pitches, really. You can do this for news organizations and other things like that. And I find that exceedingly valuable for Kickstarter campaign to really ratchet it up to the next level if you have that time, effort, and energy to devote to it. But I find that the execution of a pitch is often very universal, no matter if you're pitching one person to join you on your podcast, or if you're pitching a major news organization to cover your Kickstarter campaign. And so I'd just like to know a little bit about how you pitched, Jamie. What did you say? Can you tell us anything about like that particular email? Why did you write what you wrote, even though it's been several years?
Yeah, that's a good question. If you give me a second, I might be able to find it. And I might be able to tell you word for word what I said to Mr. Stegmaier.
Yeah, I'll give you, several seconds. I can talk. An email pitch oftentimes is received poorly if it is copy-pasted. I don't know if you've ever had anybody add you as a friend on Facebook and then paste a message like, check out my Kickstarter in so many words. You know, hey, I thought you'd be interested in this. And they paste a Kickstarter link. And when you are an influencer, you tend to just start disregarding emails because, you know, most of the time they're just garbage. People want money from you or they want your influence or that kind of thing. And I find that the best way to pitch somebody is by making it very personal and showing them that I did not copy paste this. I did think about you and I thought this might be a really great fit for you and it would be very helpful to me. And here's why. And here's an idea even of what we could talk about and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I found it. So
awesome.
But yeah, let me just jump into what I said in this particular email. And this is November 28th, 2016. So many moons ago. But basically, I started off and said, hey, Jamie, I spent the last few weeks combing the internet looking for amazing resources and articles and things like that. Because I was at the time putting together the Board Game Design Lab website, which is just a giant database of amazing content that other people have done all over the internet. So basically, I have scoured the internet for the best game design stuff so that you don't have to. You can come to my site and then you can find what you need. So I was working on that at the time. And so I basically told him, thank you for all the amazing content and all the great things that you've contributed to the game industry, the game design aspects of it, especially the book that I've read, and I really appreciate it. And then, so I kind of, the first little chunk is just saying, hey, thank you for everything. And then I went into, hey, also, I'm launching a podcast called the Board Game Design Lab that's going to explore specific topics in game design. And so I kind of pitched him what I wanted him to come on the show and talk about and say, hey, I'd really love to talk to you about what no one tells you when you first get started in game design. So I told him right out, hey, not only do I want to talk to you, not only do I see you as just this amazing expert, but here's the specific thing I want to talk to you about. Oh, I was also doing a giveaway for the launch of the show. And so at the very end, I said, also, as part of the podcast launch, I'm doing this giveaway. And so I'd like to purchase one of your games to then give away as to basically early subscribers. So if you were one of the first people to jump on board with the show, then you could win a whole bunch of games from the first, I think, five guests of the show. And so that was just another way to kind of drum up some interest and do a little marketing. And yeah, thank you for your time and consideration. And thank you for all you've added to the hobby, Gabe. And even the subject line was a thank you and a podcast request. And so that's kind of my early on pitch. And looking back at it, it's actually not that bad. Like it actually turned out a little better than I thought it would have. And so, yeah, there you go.
Kind of the, so you first said thank you for doing what you do and you showed that you have followed them and that you are interested in what is that they do, which is a whole lot more, by the way, than I feel like I'm beating a dead horse with this, but you cannot, I mean, if you show me that you know who I am, you know what I care about, and you speak to those things, you are immediately differentiate yourself from all of the people out there that just want something from me. And by when I say me, I mean that whoever it is that you're pitching, you know? So next, Gabe, you gave an intro and had a very specific ask. You introduced yourself and what it is that you're doing, and then you gave a very specific ask. I think that that's very important. I need to know clearly what it is that you want. If I don't, then I don't even, usually that's where you lose the response. If I would have responded, if I'm reading your email and I don't respond, it's because you didn't make it absolutely clear what you ask. And a lot of the time I will even bold this line in an email. It's just like, if there was one thing that you had to bold, it's what do you want, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think clarity is king. You know, so often people try to be funny, they try to be clever, and a lot of times it comes at the expense of clarity, and people don't exactly know what you're asking. They don't know what you're selling. They don't know what problem you're solving or the question that you're answering. And so, yeah, I think being very clear, being very upfront and not trying to do too much, not trying to pack too much in there, and also not trying to be clever or funny is the way to go.
Definitely. One of my turnoffs when I see an email is an email that's like, 10 paragraphs long. It looks like an essay. I don't got time to read an essay. And like you said, just be straight to the point. Tell us what you want. And it's all good.
You know, another section of that email you spoke about was kind of the benefit to them and also to you. I think it's important to be clear about how this will help you. The desire to help someone else is of great value to a lot of people. Just simply being able to pass knowledge forward or to share what it is that they know, that is of great benefit to a person. And then, of course, being able to share how that will help many others on your podcast, where potentially many people could be helped and hear, that's of huge benefit. I think it's really important to be extremely clear about what benefit is in it, or what's in it for you and what's in it for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And, people are okay with you also getting something out of it. Like, you don't have to be 100%, I'm going to give all of this away. I get nothing in return, because people don't buy that. You're getting something, and it might only be emotional or psychological. It might not be anything monetary or physical or whatever, but everybody understands that this is a reciprocating kind of situation. And so it's totally fine.
A lot of people just fail to send that email out. Really. I mean, either, most people are scared to send the email out, or they're just lazy. And if you just send the email out, you'll get rejected sometimes, but you can, it could turn your project around. It just takes, that one person to say, yeah, I'll help you out, or I'll do what you need. And it could just change your whole, your whole project. So, that's my two cents. And, that's what I'm sticking to.
Yeah. And I completely agree. I mean, it's way better to say, oh, well, than it is to say, what if, where you just don't even know. Right. And you're going to get rejected. Things are going to not work out. And people are going to say no, or just not respond at all. I had a lot of that early on, where people just didn't respond for anything. And that's totally fine, because Jamie Stegmaier did, and a whole bunch of other people did, even though a whole bunch of people didn't. And, like you said, it only takes one. And the cool thing is, after Jamie agreed to come on the show, even before he came on the show, just agreeing to come on, every single email I sent afterwards said, hey, this is me, this is who I am, this is what I'm working on. I usually put in something in there and say, hey, thank you for your contributions to the gaming industry. I really like this particular game. I really like this thing you did or wrote or whatever. And it would also say, oh, by the way, Jamie Stegmaier is going to be a guest on the show too, right? And so that would automatically give me credibility in bringing on future guests. It's like, oh, well, if Jamie's going to do it, then maybe this is a little bit more legit than I realized. And so I think that's another thing is, once you reach out to people and you can get some momentum, that just leads to more momentum. It kind of begets itself. And so that's another thing.
It's excellent. So any other thoughts as far as, email pitching? What do you personally value? What causes you to want to bring somebody onto your podcast, and what helps?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, address me by name. I get emails almost daily now of people wanting to come on the show or wanting someone else to come on the show and things like that. And if you say, hey, BGDL team, then I'm automatically going to assume you know nothing about the actual show, you know nothing about the reality of this thing. And so I'm not, maybe if it's like, hey, team, Matt Leacock wants to come back on the show again, like, okay, cool. But in general, if you're just some person that I've never heard of, or, don't know anything about, or you're just a first time creator, whatever, probably not going to really care. I'm going to respond and say, hey, probably no thanks. So address me by name. I think that goes a long way with just making, like you said earlier, custom and personalized. pitch me on the show you want to talk about. You know, I have so many people that say, hey, I would love to come on the show. Okay. Who are you? What are you doing? Like, why? You know, so pitch me, give me a pitch. Don't just say, hey, I want to do this thing. Like, be very, very specific. And I really love when people give me multiple topics. And I love it even more when they say, hey, I noticed you haven't done a topic on X, right? Because like I said earlier, I've done 200 plus episodes at this time. I have covered nearly every topic you can cover at this point, as far as mechanisms, as far as marketing and publishing, shipping, all those things. And so when someone says, hey, I noticed you haven't talked about this subject, I'm an expert, here's the reasons why, I've got a game that uses this specific mechanism, I've done this specific thing in publishing, whatever it is, it makes my life so much easier. I'm not now having to do a bunch of research on you or your thing or your company. Like, you're telling me right off the bat, and so that saves me time. And I'm a huge fan of anyone who saves me time, because that saves me a lot of other stuff.
Yeah, you know, that thought is really important. I mean, you know, to save you, it's not just time. I find that it's even more than that. When somebody can give you a topic, they're kind of doing some thinking for you, which is really, really can take a lot of energy out of you, right? I mean, when you have a really great thought, it's not like that comes around every, you know, all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And when someone gives me not only the topic, but also maybe some like subtopics that kind of go along with it, like you're saying, basically we start structuring and outlining the conversation before we're even having it, before I'm even having to sit down and think about the pod, you know, the show as a whole. Man, that's awesome. Or if you give me multiple topics, you say, hey, I know a lot about this, that, and the other thing. It's like, oh, okay, cool. That third thing, that sounds really interesting to me, because one of my filters for people coming on the show, like you said earlier, one, you have to be credible. Like, you have to be somebody in some way. That doesn't mean you have to be well-known or publish a bunch of games, but you have to be at least credible to come on the show for people to listen to you. Like, that's one of my main first questions. It's like, why would someone listen to this person? And if I don't have a good reason for that, then I'm not going to invite them on the show, right? So that's one thing. One of my other filters, and this is actually the main filter, I have to be somewhat excited, preferably really excited, to talk about that particular topic or to talk to that particular person. If it's not something I'm excited about, and I've rejected people and topics over and over and over again because it's a topic I don't care about, right? I'm not going to do an episode about a topic that I don't care about. And so, because when I say, hey, really excited to talk to you, I want to mean it. I don't want to be lying to the listeners that, you know, oh, it's really just a topic I feel like I need to do right now. No, this is something I'm actually interested in. I'm curious about, because I feel like interviews are much better when the person is actually curious. They're legitimately interested in the person they're talking to or the topic that they're talking about. And so that's another thing. And when you send me multiple options or subtopics or things like that, you give me more opportunities to see something that goes, ooh, that's interesting. That gets me going. Like, ooh, and my brain starts ticking away at possible questions and different routes we could take, and I've got more options. So if you give me, you know, five different things or three different things, you have a better chance of one of those things being exciting.
So Gabe, is there any topic that you frequently get asked to talk about that you're consistently just not very enthusiastic about, but yet is constantly asked?
I get so many people that send me emails that say, hey, I would like to talk about what it's like being a first-time creator. It's like, well, you can only do that so many times. It's kind of the same thing over and over again, you know? And, but there's a lot of people that's the only thing that they're an expert in right now, because that's really the only experience that they have is developing their first game or going to Kickstarter their first time or whatever it is. And that's the only thing they really feel comfortable or feel like they're knowledgeable enough to talk about is, oh, I'm a first-time designer, first-time publisher, first-time Kickstarter creator, whatever. And, oh, okay, well, come back to me when you're a second-time one and maybe we can talk about something different.
You know, with first-time creators, one of the biggest mistakes that I see is that they make a game, but they don't have experience actually backing games on Kickstarter. So they think their game is great. They have no idea what's out there. Maybe they're not even that experienced as far as playing board games. You know, it's very important to know what your competition is in the market. And if you make a game without actually having experienced a ton of others, then you might be making something that, number one, that already exists, maybe something that's just not up to par. And certainly if you're not familiar with other Kickstarter projects and if you're not a regular backer of Kickstarter projects, I would argue that you might not know what Kickstarter backers want. And so you're, you know, a lot of the time projects that have potential for greatness end up dying at the starting blocks because of, you know, I guess first time creator syndrome.
Yeah, I think it's important that you know what makes good games good. And you do that obviously by playing good games, because you know a key example is Riot Games. They created one game, League of Legends, which was their first game, instant success, and you know they haven't looked back since. So there's an example of a game developer who didn't have a large track record of creating or publishing games, but they just created one game that they had. They obviously all were gamers and had lots of experience with games. But there's an example of a game developer producing one game and then just, you know, sticking with it.
I wonder how many games they worked on before that, though, or what, how many games they worked on that turned into League of Legends. Like, I wonder if they started off with like a totally different idea or something like that and then eventually evolved, or if they just were like, we're going to make League of Legends, and it became a $1 trillion thing overnight.
Yeah, from my understanding, they were World of Warcraft players and they saw problems with that game and they decided to create their own game based off the Defense of the Ancients, and they created League of Legends. So yeah, they were Warcraft 3, and I think they were just Blizzard fans. So I think they had a lot of experience playing games. I'm not sure if they're too much of actually developing games.
Gotcha. Now on our end, as a marketing company, we have to be pretty realistic with our clients and let them know when we think something may or may not work. Gabe, have you ever broken someone's heart by just, you know, telling them that I don't think this game is going to quite make it through, you know, through Kickstarter or through publication?
Oh yeah, plenty of times. People pay me for coaching and consulting sometimes to help them with game design, to help them with their Kickstarter campaign, things like that. And I've had to have very honest conversations with people. Usually it's early on. It's kind of like a, hey, make sure you set your expectations. You know, looking at this game, looking at you as a first-time creator, looking at the real reality of things, the odds are you're not going to get more than 300 backers for this campaign. So you need to set your funding goal accordingly, and you need to be ready, if you need to put your own money into it. You need to be willing to take the next 6 months to a year and just market and build a landing page. Like, just being very upfront and saying, hey, these kinds of games don't do really well on Kickstarter, or you're in a situation where maybe the art is not great, and so maybe you want to think about, you know, I don't know if you can do this at this point, but you might want to think about getting some different art, or at least getting some different graphic design that maybe can turn a turn the nuggets into gold. You know, you've got coal, and maybe they can, a good graphic designer can help make it better. So yeah, it happens all the time, and a lot of people, they don't want to hear it, but the ones that actually listen and they take that feedback and they don't get mad or offended, they're the ones that turn that, you know, the campaign or turn something around, where maybe that campaign doesn't go so well, or maybe they don't do it at all, but they're set up for success long-term because they're willing to listen, they're willing to take feedback, take advice, and then turn it into reality.
Let's get into your specific business plan. How does your business plan for BGDL and Barrett Publishing fit together? You know, you're not only running this podcast and the website, but you're also publishing games. Is the vision just simply to do this full-time, or where do you want to go with this?
One of the main things is I look at this whole picture as how do these things fit together, right? Because one really great thing about working on my own games and publishing and shipping and marketing, all that stuff of my own stuff, is that it constantly gives me anecdotes and stories and case studies and successes and failures that I can talk about on the podcast. And so when people listen, they know I'm not just some dude talking about it, I'm also some dude doing it, right? And I have made mistakes, and I can speak from experience about playtests that didn't go very well, or marketing dollars I spent on one way and I should have spent them another, or making a mistake in shipping that cost me a bunch of money. Like, I can speak on those different topics. And so that's really, really helpful, because one side of my company basically informs the other side. Now, when I look at the company in general, Barrett Publishing, it basically has two different branches, one being game design and then one being game publishing. And so my focus is on the game design aspects. That's where I put the majority of my time, my energy, my effort, my money, is building up that brand, building up that side of the company, because honestly, that's what I love anyway. I really enjoy that side of things more than the other. And, you know, the interviews and being able to get into the community and help people and posting online and all that kind of stuff. And so I have to constantly be thinking through, okay, what products do I want to make? And am I making sure to keep a focus on game designers? And then, so all the games I make are really side projects. They're kind of the hobby side of things, whereas the board game design stuff is really the core, the focus, the heart of my company.
Where do you see it eventually going? I mean, you know, as far as, let's say, if Barrett Publishing really takes off, if your Hunted series takes off and other things like that, and it can be found in Barnes & Noble and sells like hotcakes, where would you like to end up?
That's a good question. As far as like Kickstarter, I don't know. I really enjoy the Kickstarter process. I love the community. I love people kind of helping you come alongside and create a game, build a game, add different things as far as new ideas for cards or new ideas for components or upgrading things. Like, I really enjoy that process right now. At the same time, it's a huge pain in the butt because there's a lot more to think about. There's a lot more to plan, a lot more to figure out as far as the money and the shipping and all that. And so I can definitely see why people would want to not have to do that anymore. I'm not to that point. Maybe I'll get there at some point. But again, a lot of the stuff I do, even through Kickstarter, is focused on game design. And so that being the case, it's really enjoyable. You know, I did the board game design starter kit a while back, and you guys actually helped me market that. And it was a really successful campaign. And I loved being able to work with the game designers that were backing that campaign and say, all right, how can I serve you better? What else can I add in here? What other digital components to this can I have? What other physical components? What other tiles or dice or cubes, whatever? What can we put in here to make this a really amazing product for you? And I really enjoy that aspect of things. So, you know, we'll see. We'll keep it going this way for now.
Let's say if everything just blew up and you had to start everything over from the beginning, how would you do it now?
Yeah, so I would start the community sooner. I think I was 2 years of doing the show, roughly, before I started the Facebook community. And so I would probably start that maybe after a year, right? Go ahead and get that going. I would have done my first board game Kickstarter differently. I had to cancel that one. It was on track to maybe fund at the very, very end, like last day kind of thing. But I made a bunch of mistakes with the marketing and I didn't have enough preview videos. There's just a bunch of mistakes there in that campaign. But at the same time, making those mistakes made for really good podcast content. So it's hard for me to say I'd go back and change it because I don't know that that would be a good idea. I don't know that I would change too much overall. It's just been a wild ride. I've really enjoyed majority of it. And so it's been fun. You know, one thing I'm working on now, and maybe I would have done this sooner, is creating basically a alternative community website. So instead of relying on Facebook so much, creating a website on my own domain, you know, not building my house on somebody else's land, you know, not building my community on Facebook, but building up the community somewhere else and having a website for basically game design headquarters, you know, a hub for game designers. I've been working on that for the last few months and getting ready to launch that here pretty soon. So maybe I would have done that sooner, but I don't know that I would do anything different, just maybe sooner.
I know we talked about the BGDL website a little bit, you know, so let's start there.
Yeah, so originally the website was mainly a place for my podcast to live. If you wanted to find the show, you could go to iTunes or wherever, you know, you listen to podcasts, but the website had everything there as well. And then there was also a huge database of links to different resources and blogs and articles and YouTube videos and all around the internet that I had kind of conglomerated and put, you know, on the site and organized it, I think, pretty well to be able to find things fairly easily. And so that was the site. It wasn't super attractive. I just found a WordPress theme that had a focus on podcasting. And I went with that. And that was the site for, I don't know, close to 4 years, I guess, 3.5 years. And then I realized that I needed to pivot. I needed to do something different and make it more about game design in general, not just about the podcast. So several months ago, I found an artist, a guy that I've actually worked with on several projects. And he created some amazing illustrations. And I totally changed the theme of the site. And I went in and did a bunch of custom stuff. And I reorganized everything to make it even easier to find things and just made the site look a lot better. And relaunched the site. And I think it looks amazing. And so I think having something that looks good is marketing in itself, right? And you guys talk about board games. I'm sure you talk about it all the time, you know, table presence and having a game that looks good and brings people to say, hey, what is that? And they want to know more and they want to scroll down the campaign page or whatever because the game looks good. So I think that's part of it. Make sure your stuff looks good. But then also, you know, getting on the front page of Google was a huge thing. Like you can see a giant jump in traffic around the time that I made it to the front page of Google if you search board game design and several other phrases. And so that was massive. And I didn't necessarily even like set out to do that. That was like an indirect thing. But apparently, because I have so many links on my site, and then all these other people were linking to my site and all the links to the podcast episodes on the site and, you know, hundreds of episodes. And so that created a lot of favorability in Google's algorithm to put me on the front page. And so that was a big thing. And so doing a lot of content marketing, creating really good content that people get a lot of value out of, that they visit, that they link to, obviously that's going to bring more traffic overall and going to help you rank higher through the SEO and all that good stuff. And so, you know,
it's basically Rick's job description. Yeah. You explained it.
Thanks. Yeah. You keep doing it, man. Cause it's not easy. But anyway, that was just something kind of like a little side effect of creating consistent weekly content that people are getting a lot of value out of. And so that was one thing. And then also I have with my email list, whenever you subscribe to my email list, you get an immediate, you know, automatic response and it says, hey, thanks for joining. And it gives a bunch of like feedback as far as like, hey, you can find this here. Hey, join us in the Facebook community here. Hey, there's a thing going on. Here's a coupon for like 15% off of this thing. And then at the bottom, it says, hey, do me a favor really quick and tell me what your number one game design challenge is right now. You know, reply to this email kind of thing. And so I get a ton of emails every week from people signing up for the email list and then sending me an email. And I say, hey, I'm really struggling with time management. I'm really struggling with this mechanism. I'm struggling with Kickstarter, whatever. And I get the opportunity in my response to them of saying, hey, really appreciate you joining. Here are some links on the website for content, for you know, podcast episodes or whatever that could help you through that specific design challenge that you have. So I'm constantly redirecting people back to the site to basically for them to find resources to get the help that they need. And so it's this kind of circular kind of thing where when people come in, I'm redirecting them to the site, whether they come in because of the podcast or the Facebook community. And if they come in through the site, then I'm redirecting them to different parts of the site or directing them to other aspects of things that I'm doing. So it all kind of works together.
When a designer sends you a message and says, I'm having trouble with X, you know, what are the most common board game design issues you see from first-time developers?
Yeah, the number one issue by far, and it's not even close. It's kind of like when you look at Michael Jordan compared to like whoever number two is on whatever stat line you're looking at. It's like that. The number one thing I see is time. People struggle with time and, you know, finding time, making time to design games. It's something they want to do, but, you know, they've got kids and a job and all sorts of other responsibilities and obligations. And so time is the biggest one that I see. And so I'm able to point people to, I've done several episodes at this point on time management. There's all sorts of links on the website about how to create time throughout your week and things like that. So that's number one. The number two thing is where people just struggle. You know, a lot of these people are first time designers. They're just now getting into game design. They've been designing games for 15 minutes or so. And so they really struggle with taking an idea and getting it out of their head and actually onto a table, you know, going from their notebook and turning it into a prototype. And so that's probably the number two thing that I see people struggling with is just like, how do I do this? How do I create this thing? And I get the opportunity to give them advice on, you know, here's my process. Here's the process of the people that I know that are successful. And I get to share some wisdom, you know, about how to actually turn an idea into a real game.
How does someone make time for marketing in a very, very busy schedule? You know, when they have a job, when they have, you know, other responsibilities, how does someone make time for marketing? How do they leverage their time in order to do marketing stuff?
Well, I think the key word there is schedule. You create a schedule. You don't leave this up to your feelings or your energy level. You create a schedule and then you stick to it, right? So for instance, I've got a game going to Kickstarter soon. It's the third game in my Hunted series. And so I've been trying to, you know, put out artwork and put out questions and things like that recently to the Hunted Facebook group specifically, and just try to get people excited and hyped up about that. And so I've scheduled things over the next, you know, couple of weeks of basically like scheduled posts where it'll say, hey guys, check out this new art. And now the art's been done for like maybe a couple of weeks, but I'm scheduling these posts so that it's kind of spread out, because I would love to just go, hey, check out all the new art and say, hey, here's 10 new images. But it's smarter for me to basically drip the content out more slowly and keep people engaged and keep them aware and get them excited leading up to the Kickstarter campaign. And so I think that's one thing. You're scheduling things, and it's not just based on, oh, I'm really excited right now, let me give everything. It's like, okay, I'm excited right now, let me create a whole bunch of scheduled posts that'll drip this content out over time. So I think that's one thing. Also just creating a schedule of engagement, right? So thinking through, all right, I need to email my email subscribers about the progress of my game or opening, you know, playtest sessions or whatever. Let me do that once every 2 weeks or something and put that on the calendar and say, okay, on every other Tuesday, I'm going to send out an email about these topics. And maybe this email is about these topics, maybe the other email is about those topics. And people can expect things, you know, every other Tuesday, they're going to receive an email from me about the game and its progress. And so I think scheduling things, putting it on the actual calendar, not even just having an idea, but like write it down, is hugely important if you actually want to get stuff done.
One thing that I expect might be scheduled is for the Board Game Design Lab, you have this post every Monday and a post every Friday about what are your goals on Monday for moving your game designs forward, and on Friday, what did you accomplish this week? Do you go to the BGDL on Monday morning and type that, or is that something that you've scheduled in advance?
In the beginning, I would do it myself. I would go there every Monday and every Friday, and I would put the thing in there, but I had a tendency to forget because it wasn't quite a habit yet. And I also had a tendency to do it at different times. So sometimes it'd be 7:15, sometimes it'd be like 10:30. And so I wanted to make sure it was consistent, same day, same time. And so now I have a Sunday night routine, and it's just on my schedule where I'm going to sit down and I'm going to schedule those BGDL posts. And if I have other games that I'm working on, I'll schedule those on that Sunday night as well. And then I also work on the Monday morning email on Sunday night as well, get it all prepped and ready and set up in the email autoresponder and ready to go out on Monday morning. So Sunday night is now kind of my time on my calendar that I do those things.
A lot of people are kind of afraid to show all of their game for one reason or another. Like, you know, for example, myself with Deliverance, I have a lot of art pieces. I might actually be a bad example because I have hundreds of art pieces, I think. So I think it would be impossible to show all of my game. But, you know, for somebody that has maybe 10 to 15, maybe 20 meaningful art pieces in their game, is there ever a risk of running out of things to share? Or do you repurpose things that you've shared? Or are you, you know, how would you go about sharing your stuff for Hunted? Do you share all of it? Do you keep some of it back? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, for sure. Well, now Hunted has a tremendous amount of art, so I'm never going to have to worry about, you know, not having enough to show or running out. It's kind of one good thing, but also it's also more expensive when you do that. I think another thing you can do is show the process. So one thing I've done in the past is I'll show people kind of the process by which maybe the box is coming together. And I say, hey guys, here's the general concept. Here's the sketch. And I'll show them like a, in the middle, like here it is. And it's kind of the, some of the art is coming in and like, you can kind of see how things are going to work together. And then I'll do another post and say, hey guys, here's the final, you know, what are your thoughts? And so one thing, you get feedback along the way. And if somebody notices something that's maybe wrong or needs to be fixed or something that maybe it looks really similar to another game and you weren't even aware, like people can start pointing those things out so that you don't finish the thing and spend a bunch of money on it and then go, oh, I wish I had done it differently. So you get really good immediate feedback, which is excellent. But then also you get engagement. You get people kind of along for the ride, along for the journey. And so I think all those things are helpful.
So Gabe, why don't you tell us, how did you get into publishing? Was that always a thought in the back of your head whilst you were creating the Board Game Design Lab, or was that just like a happy consequence?
Well, it's interesting. So for a long time, I was designing games and trying to get them published with, you know, already established publishers. And I had no desire to get into publishing. I had interviewed way too many people who had made way too many mistakes and cost themselves tens of thousands of dollars. And I was like, I don't think I want to do that. And so for a long time, I had no desire whatsoever to run Kickstarters or do anything. But then the more I learned and the more I ran into really frustrating situations where I was lied to by publishers, or a game was like going to be signed and then things fell through for some like really shady reasons. Like, a lot of really annoying, negative, frustrating things happened when I was trying to work with publishers or as I was working with publishers. And so that kind of put a bad taste in my mouth for a little while of like, you know what, kind of, I don't want to deal with this. Not that everybody in publishing is the same. I knew that's not true. But I was just kind of frustrated and a little bit burnt out dealing with publishers. And so then I started thinking like, well, maybe I can just do it myself. I mean, I started the Board Game Design Lab because, you know, I was having a hard time finding the thing that I wanted. And so maybe I can just do the same thing with publishing. And, you know, I've got these games that I also want to play, and I'm designing games that I wish were out in the marketplace. And so what does it look like to, you know, publish my own games? And the good news is at that point, I had built up such a relationship base with so many publishers that I could reach out to people and ask for advice. And it was people that had already come on my show, or I had already, you know, given something to them. And now this is a way to give back. Like, it was just a really good position to be in that most people aren't going to be in, to be honest. Like, they're not going to have all these email addresses and they can send out to people and then get immediate responses. And those people are really excited and happy to work with you. You're going to get that some, but I had just a huge list of people that I could ask questions to. And so that's kind of where it all started. And I still made plenty of mistakes, but I think I had a much easier transition into publishing than had I just tried to do it from the beginning.
Yeah, you know, one thing that I really love when I hear people say first-time creators, a lot of the time they'll put their heart and soul into their first game and, you know, they'll take a little bit extra time on it because, you know, it's not the primary breadwinner or anything. They just want to make it as great of a product that they can, you know. And I love hearing from first-time creators, for maybe first-time clients of ours, that they have read the entirety of KickstarterLessons.com. You know, Jamie Stegmaier's many, many Kickstarter lessons and James Matthey's stuff. I love how people can at least have a head knowledge of something before they get that practical knowledge. A lot of the time they can avoid some significant mistakes.
So Gabe, how did you get into coaching then?
Well, that was something I didn't necessarily think about. I had a lot of people that would reach out to me and ask if I did it, right? They, you know, they're listening to the show, they're hearing my advice and my experience and different things that I'm sharing through the podcast. And so I had several people, I guess it was 2 years ago or so when people first started asking me if I did coaching or consulting about design or publishing or Kickstarter or anything like that. And so I, out of being requested, I just started doing it on the side. And now that I've basically turned this into my full-time gig, you know, I'm leaning into it more and kind of putting it out there and advertising and saying, hey, this is something I'm offering, you know, going into 2021. And yeah, so start off with people asking me and then turn into, you know what, this is actually a pretty good idea as far as something else I can do to help people and then also, you know, earn a little extra income.
How do you get your audience excited about a product and market for you?
I kind of have two different approaches, whether it's a game or whether it's something that's game design focused, game design related. If it's just a normal game, normal Kickstarter, then I call you guys and I say, hey, what do you need? And then we work together and we figure that out. And I think I'm actually behind the deadline for a couple things. And so sorry about that. We're trying to put together a landing page right now as we're getting ready to start driving traffic there and talking about the next Hunted game, which I'm super excited about. The art looks phenomenal. And anyway, really pumped about that. And so let me just kind of look at the other side. I think that's got a little bit more to it in the game design stuff, because I mean, that is the focus of my company. I start dropping seeds early, right? And so maybe I'll mention it on the podcast, mention something I'm working on. You know, I've been working on this new community site for a while. And so over the last, I don't know, month or so, I've dropped little seeds and said, oh yeah, I'm working on this thing. And it relates to our current conversation, our current podcast episode in this way. Right. And it won't be some like marketing thing at the time. It's really just me saying, hey, here's an interesting thing I'm learning based on this project I'm working on. And so I'll start dropping hints. Right. And I might drop some hints in the Facebook community. Maybe I'll post a picture, or maybe I'll post a question or a survey or a Google form and say, hey, you know, I'm looking for some feedback on this idea or these things. Or also another great thing is I'll just say, hey, what are you guys excited about? Here are 10 things that I am potentially excited about. What of these things are you excited about as well? And, you know, are you excited about a book on this topic? Are you excited about a game design calendar? Are you excited about whatever? And let my target audience, my target customers, tell me what they want. And then I take that information and I put my money, effort, and energy into those things that they already told me that they want, right? As opposed to me going, oh, I'm really excited about this thing. And then I work and create it. And then nobody cares. Nobody buys it, because that doesn't help anybody. And so I think asking your audience what they want is really smart as well. And this could also be the case in games. You know, if you have especially if you have a series of games, like for instance, with Hunted, you know, every game has a very different theme to it. And so I can ask the members of the Hunted community, the people who enjoy the game, and say, hey, what theme do you want to see next? And I can kind of aggregate the top ones and then go, okay, this gives me a really good direction for like maybe what themes to work on in the next games. Figuring out who your customers are, asking them what they want, give people what they want. Don't answer questions nobody's asking. I think it's a big one. You know, don't try to sell people things that no one wants to buy. And if you do those things, you'll be off to a good start.
So as an owner of a really popular, well, a popular Facebook group, I'm sure that you've observed some people that get a lot of responses from their questions and comments and things like that. And then others that will post something and just, you know, seems to fall on deaf ears. So what advice would you give to others trying to get traction in Facebook groups with their posts?
Yeah. So again, scheduling is big. You know, I've got my Monday post that I do every single Monday. I got the Friday post every single Friday. There's other members of the community that have different posts that they do. Like Ben Moy does one every single, I think, Saturday. And so I think consistency and asking questions and like not just saying, hey, here's the thing, but you know, asking a question and really seeking out people's opinions or ideas or advice or working together or something like that, I think goes a long way, because that's going to get people to engage more if you're actually asking them to engage. And so I think that's a big part of it. I think creating, like you were saying just a moment ago, an environment of encouragement in the VGDL community, kindness is expected. You know, we're not going to tolerate anything less than people being kind to each other. You don't have to agree. Well, I could care less if you agree about something. But you're going to talk to each other in a way that is uplifting, in a way that's kind. We're not going to call each other names, even if you really think the worker placement mechanic is the greatest thing ever made and other people think you're an idiot. We're not going to call each other idiots, right? You're entitled to your own opinions, and you know, we're not going to bring each other down, even when we disagree, especially when we disagree. And so I think creating an atmosphere where people know that that is the case and that is the expectation, like you said, it encourages people to do more. You know, they feel like this is a safe place for me to ask questions. I don't have to worry about, you know, being made fun of or embarrassed or something like that. I can say, hey, here's my very simple basic question, because I've been designing games for 5 minutes. And people will come in and say, oh man, you need to check this out, or here, look at this resource, or check out this podcast. And people are very open to helping each other. And I think it reciprocates back and forth. And it's a snowball effect. It just creates momentum and it just keeps going.
What do you feel like you do better than others that people could take a look at you and emulate?
I mean, probably community. I think that's kind of the thing that I have had the most success with, is building up this community. And it wasn't like a plan. I didn't sit down years ago and go, oh, I'm going to build this great community that turns into this amazing thing that helps me become a full-time, you know, worker in the industry. But it's relationships. It's trying to help people, trying to serve. It's giving more than I take. I think that goes a long way. And people, they see that. They can sense it, even if they can't put words to it. It's something they can feel about companies that that do that. I took some advice to heart a while back that has been super helpful. And that advice was, do for one person what you wish you could do for everybody. You know, I can't sit down and have a conversation with all 7,500 people in the Facebook community or whatever, but I can have a conversation with this one person right now. And so I can help them the way I wish I could help everybody. And if you just kind of think in those terms, you're much more likely to do something. You're much more likely to actually engage with people as opposed to being overwhelmed and think, well, there's too many and I'm just not going to worry about it at all because this is not possible to talk to everybody. Well, you're right, it's not, but you can talk to one, you know, two, 10. And so I think that's been super helpful. And it just created really good relationships and people that keep coming back every single day, as far as, like you're saying, answering questions and engaging with the community and talking to each other and you know, debating about various things. And I think all that coming together is probably the main thing that I've been able to build.
Awesome. So Gabe, then, you know, is there anything else that you feel like we haven't addressed that you would really love our listeners to know?
Yeah, I'd say a lot of times people get overwhelmed. And it's because the idea or whatever you're aiming at, whatever you're trying to accomplish is probably just a little bit too big. And so my advice for people that maybe are feeling overwhelmed, because if you're going to try to run a Kickstarter, that is a massive undertaking. I mean, you're talking about, if you're going to do it well, do it right. I mean, you're talking about a year of build up and marketing. And not only that, but you're also designing a game and playtesting and developing and paying for art and figuring out the shipping and all. Like, there's so many things to think about. And a lot of times people get overwhelmed, even when it comes to social media engagement, right? It's hard to even get online and post about your game or post about your project sometimes. And so my best advice to you, if you're listening and you're in that situation, is honestly the best advice I ever received. And that is to aim lower, right? Aim as low as possible until you find something that you can actually accomplish and then build up from there. You know, be faithful in small things and then greater things get added unto you is something I am a firm believer in. And so if you're really overwhelmed, if you're really like looking at the big picture of things and going, this is too much, I can't do it, you might be right, but just aim a little bit lower. Make things a little bit smaller. Break things up into a little bit smaller pieces until the pieces are so small, then it becomes a lot easier to get things done. Reach out to other people. They can help you. Don't try to do it all yourself. There's no reason to try to do everything yourself. And so find other people to come alongside and help with different things that you're not very good at. But yeah, biggest thing is aim a little bit lower, make things a little bit smaller, and then build up from there.
All right, guys, looks like we are out of time for this week's episode of the Crowdfunding Nerds Podcast. We would like to thank our special guest, Gabe Barrett from Board Game Design Lab. You can visit his website, which has great resources at boardgamedesignlab.com. And also, as he's mentioned, his Facebook community of over 7,500 members at BGDL Community when you do your search on Facebook. If you have any questions or more interest about what we do at Crowdfunding Nerds, please visit crowdfundingnerds.com. And if you have any questions for us, visit crowdfundingnerds.com/question. And we will see you next time, nerds. Woo!
So I definitely thought I was muted there towards the end, and I let out a pretty good burp there. So I just edit that.